From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Y. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov.
Harper is 1-for-3 today. Phillies have tied it at 5 here in the bottom of the 6th inning. That one's out towards center field. That sounded as good as the one yesterday. It is gone!
It's been an exciting spring for the Phillies for the first time in a few years, thanks in large part to newly minted Philly Bryce Harper. And whenever this happens, the Phillies getting off to a good start, I automatically think back to a season a lot of Philadelphians remember well, 1993. I was 13, and I remember a lot from that summer. The team's scruffy lineup that resembled the Bad News Bears and featured the likes of Darren Dalton, Mickey Morandini, and Pete Incaviglia had inexplicably become baseball's elite. It was a Philadelphia dream. Every Joe Schmo on the street could see himself in John Kruk's portly physique. The team was us that summer, and we were all winners. Until we weren't. Two things happened that fall, and I'm not saying those two things are related, but they both definitely happened. First, after the Phillies made it to the World Series, the city decided to celebrate by putting a giant red Phillies hat on top of the William Penn statue on City Hall, 548 feet up. Pictures of this spectacle were surreal, like seeing the Sphinx with sunglasses on. But everybody was in on the hype, and I don't remember a lot of controversy around it. Then this happened.
Two balls and two strikes on it. Here's a pitch on the way, a swing and a belt. Left field, way back. Blue Jays win it. The Blue Jays are World Series champions. That's Joe Carter.
The Phillies, of course, lost that World Series on Joe Carter's walk-off home run. We were all crushed. I don't remember the hat coming off of William Penn, or the next time I thought about it. But when I did, it was with a stinging bitterness. That stupid hat. I've been thinking about that hat recently, as the Phillies have seen some early success this year. And I realized I didn't know much about where the idea came from. So I called up the guy responsible for it. Hello.
Hey, Shai, how are you?
Hey, good. Ed Rendell, how are you doing?
Doing great.
Doing great.
What do you need?
This, of course, is former Pennsylvania governor and former Philadelphia mayor Ed Rendell. I was a kid when this happened. I remember it well. Where did the idea come from to put the Phillies hat on top of William Penn?
I don't rightly remember. I think it either came from Bill Giles or I thought it up myself and I called Bill Giles.
Bill Giles was part owner of the Phillies at the time.
When the Phillies won the pennant and got into the World Series, we thought we wanted to do something to continue to keep spirits high and, you know, get the city involved, even though they were pretty involved, but get them more involved. And again, I don't know who thought up the idea, but I remember I called Bill and I said, Bill, if I give you permission, could you put a Phillies hat on top of William Penn? And Bill said, give me an hour. He hung up and he got back to me an hour and a half later and said, yep, I think we can do it.
That was it. That was all it took. He figured out how to do it.
That was all it took.
Yeah.
Helicopter took it in the air. It was hanging down from the helicopter. And then with the help of some guys who do this type of climbing for a living, we were able to put the hat on and secure it.
What did people think of the idea at the time? Like when that hat went on, did people like it?
No, people weren't crazy. People absolutely went crazy. The most sought-after thing was a close-up picture of the hat on top of Billy Penn. And then we lost the World Series. Then a couple of years later, the Flyers won their division and were in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Sadly, I remember this pretty well, too.
And Ed Snyder called me and said, can we put a Flyers jersey on top of William Penn? And I said, well, how can I say no to you? And I said yes to the Phillies. So they put a Flyers jersey on top of William Penn. And the Flyers lost the Stanley Cup.
After that Flyers jersey debacle, people started to say we were cursed. But that curse didn't start out with our sports teams, and it didn't start with that jersey or that hat. It started with this. In 1985, a 61-story skyscraper was built in Philadelphia, the first building taller than the statue of William Penn on City Hall. That broke a decades-long agreement between the city and developers that no one build taller than Penn's hat. So in 97, after the Flyers lost, we realized the jersey, the hat, the agreement, it was all tied together. We had disrespected our founder, and now we were paying the price. The curse of Billy Penn was born.
No one ever asked us to put anything on top of Billy Penn again.
Today on The Why, the gentleman's agreement. To fully understand why the curse exists and why it's such a Philly thing, you have to go back to the 19th century, to the construction of City Hall and that statue of William Penn. I talked about that with Temple history professor Ken Finkel. So let's start with Philadelphia City Hall. When was it built?
Well, it was started in 1871 and it was topped out around 1894, although the tower didn't get the statue until just after that.
In the later 1800s, City Hall was built in the square which had been reserved for it by William Penn 200 years earlier.
So in the 1950s, Ed Bacon was the city planner. He's Kevin Bacon's father.
Mm-hmm.
And he's responsible for a lot of how modern Philadelphia looks. What did he think of City Hall and what did he want to do with it?
It really wasn't about creating a city that was filled with skyscrapers or towers. It was a city that, in Bacon's view, was going to take advantage of its 17th century founding, a walkable, livable city.
I extended the plan for pedestrian movement throughout the old city by the meandering pattern of the Greenway system.
So Bacon's plan kind of had City Hall as the centerpiece of this walkable city. And in comes this mention of this gentleman's agreement. Can you just describe what that refers to?
Sure. So Bacon believed that there shouldn't be taller buildings than City Hall. He believed this from the beginning. He saw the founding of the city, that building, and that location as sort of key, almost a three-legged stool on which he could build a lot of recognition for Philadelphia as an original, completely sensible place, really distinguishing it from other cities around the nation and around the world.
So was there an actual agreement? Like, what was the gentleman's agreement?
Actually, the first time it was mentioned in print that I could find was in The New Yorker in April 1956. And Lewis Mumford, who might have been teaching at Penn at the time but wrote a series of articles about Philadelphia. And he wrote, "The one building that towers above
the central area of Philadelphia is the City Hall, surmounted by a bronze figure of William Penn. Without legislation and with nothing more solid than a gentleman's agreement, the tallest of the city office buildings have been piously kept lower than the bronze figure atop this building."
Ken says this gentleman's agreement stayed in place for a while. Then, in the mid-1980s, developer Willard Rouse proposed a tower on West Market Street called One Liberty Place. At 61 stories, the building would tower over Penn's hat.
Well, that debate was pretty intense. It literally was in the paper and in the letters to the editor and on the air every day. There was a new idea or thought or proposal or counter. Bacon wrote an op-ed piece on March 11th, 1984. The headline read, "Gentlemen, don't try to top Billy Penn." And he makes a good case. Here is a characteristic that sets Philadelphia apart from all others in the United States. It has been maintained through the years by a delicate thread, a gentleman's agreement. So he's invoking gentleman's agreement, and then he's saying, this is the time for us to decide whether we want to continue this tradition or discard it. In my view, this is Bacon talking, in my view, the violation of this long-respected consensus would be an incomparable tragedy for Philadelphia.
The tower was, of course, built in the end, breaking the decades-long gentleman's agreement. It was followed by another tower, then another, and another. It's safe to say the city skyline is very different from what it was during the gentleman's agreement, and that construction has vaulted the city into the 21st century. For many Philadelphians, myself included, the gentleman's agreement was a symbol of a larger conflict. How do we hold on to our essence while pushing the city forward? And in holding on too hard for too long, have we missed out? I put these questions to Ken Finkel. Do you think that this gentleman's agreement has held the city back in any way from developing at the pace of, say, New York?
The argument back then was that, well, if you want to be a real American city, you got to build tall.
Mm-hmm.
And that if you want to be a charming American city, a destination for tourists, well, that's fine. Keep your charm. But the idea of going tall came along with being a big city in the late 20th century. There was no other way around it.
Well, Philly is kind of known as a big city that in some ways is like a small town, not just in terms of the architecture. It hangs on to its traditions. A lot of people tend to stay in the area. Do you think that this is all kind of tied up in the same phenomenon?
Oh, sure. The fact that Philadelphia is comfortable and is comfortable with its past and the material of its past, the red brick, the white marble, the row houses. Philadelphia grew to be one of the most comfortable cities.
So since the 80s, when the agreement was broken, do you see that changing both in terms of the way the city looks? We have 10 buildings that are taller than City Hall, but also like in terms of the mindset, are we becoming a more national, more global city?
Yeah, Philadelphia is now poised to become, or it already is, a major city in terms of commerce and in terms of leadership, in terms of technology, education, and so on. That symbolic historical space at the top of City Hall, no matter what else is around it, that's really the beginning of a historical timeline that when you're on the ground at City Hall, especially in the courtyard, which has no other sculpture, you're on this timeline. You're part of it. You're bringing that timeline alive by being on the street at City Hall on the sidewalk. Having taller buildings does not erode that realization.
Ken, thanks for coming in.
Oh, my pleasure.
So, breaking the gentleman's agreement started the curse, and the hat and jersey only fueled the fire. Given that, I wanted to know whether Ed Rendell had any regrets. I mean, thinking back on it, would you have done that again?
Sure. It was great fun. Look, remember, this was 93. The city was broke. We were fighting back, but to fight back, we had to cut a lot of services, and it was pretty grim around the city. And one of the things I did deliberately is I tried to make the city more fun. We wanted to cash in on things that made the city an exciting, vibrant place, and I thought putting the hat on Billy Penn would be great fun, and I thought the citizenry would love it, and it would be up there, and it got great attention. I mean, it was shown on TV during the World Series itself.
Since then, this is a very superstitious city, and we've been putting little William Penn statues on top of every building that's become the tallest building here. And of course, the Phillies have won the World Series. Flyers, not yet.
My chief of staff, former chief of staff, the great David Cohn, I think was the first one to do that. And you're right, we did okay. So maybe the curse is broken, and we don't even know it.
Sounds good. I think this is about it. I appreciate you talking to me.
All right. If you need anything else, give me a buzz. I'm around all day.
Thank you. The hat resurfaced last year, by the way, appearing for sale on eBay for the second time in 4 years. At last check, it was listed for just $900. The Y is produced by me, Shai Ben-Yaakov, along with Annette John Hall, Alex Stern, and Kelsey Hansen, with editorial direction from Katie Culinary. Tweet me at Shai Ben-Yaakov. Have a good holiday. We'll be back tomorrow.